condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howie. He's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up about 50. NASDAQ futures up 24. Dow futures down 57. It's got a couple of earnings. Got Apple down 230, even though they had pretty good earnings. Everybody's got pretty good earnings. Everybody's beating the estimates. When you don't give guidance and you leave the estimates lower, it's pretty easy to beat the estimates. But, Apple had a pretty good quarter. McDonald's had a good quarter. They're starting to actually admit, even though they're down 81 cents, but that's not very much. And they're still trading 245. But now it's Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Hey, got a full back tank of gas. It's dark and we're wearing masks again.
And sunglasses. Because we're fogging up our sunglasses with the masks. Just saying.
No kidding.
It is interesting when you talk about the bifurcation. How's that for a word? First 10 seconds of the show, bifurcation. I mean, if you listen to
it's probably more than anybody can handle in the first 10 seconds of the show.
That's true. But if you listen to the people on CNBC who have their audience, which is us, by the way. I mean, it's not like, but you can actually get drilled into your feeble brain like me. If you listen, you actually would think that inflation is a really good thing for you. Now, you listen to McDonald's.
I'm excited about it. Are you like me?
I have clients that have some McDonald's stock and so forth. But really, McDonald's raising their prices and having a good quarter is probably not the best thing for anybody I know. And it's good that they're, you know, not going out of business, but the fact that they successfully could raise their prices enough to have a blowout quarter, I don't know that that's good for every man. Necessarily. Well, if every man got a raise, it wouldn't matter. We'd love to see McDonald's raise their prices. Everybody else had a commensurate pay raise. But have you seen any pay raises?
Might be a few.
But it is.
Well, and you know, bidding in to get people to work has caused some increases in pay compared to what they used to pay, but. Commensurate with inflation, it depends. How do you count inflation? You know, you want to say, is it commensurate with real inflation? Maybe not. Is it commensurate with reported inflation? Perhaps.
I'm starting to get this feeling that, as a matter of fact, one of our listeners sent us. I don't know if you got this thing here. It was. Money aggregates, debt, pent-up demand, and inflation evidence from World War II. This is put up by the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta Policy Hub. What in God's name is a policy hub? Maybe, do you know?
Policy hub?
Yeah. Is that like a hub cap? What is that?
Well, is there a cap on it?
I'm thinking they'll say whatever they want. But
usually when they say hub, it's just a centralized place, so... Whatever, you know, they probably can conglomerate a lot of different policy positions into some kind of whole.
Well, so we could put something out.
Perhaps hole with an H at the beginning. I'm not sure which.
Well, should we put out like a Stacks and Jacks study from our think tank hub, or what is that necessarily?
I think we go, we just call it the Stocks and Jocks Policy Hub. There's no reason we can't steal it. It sounds very official important.
Yeah. When you guys go to, like, the saloon after the ball game, are you like a baseball hub, maybe?
Sure.
I mean, why not? I mean, you're something. Anyway, these guys are trying to draw correlations between the increased money supply and increased inflation after World War II, when a lot of GIs came back and the demand went up, and how it dissipated right after. Does anybody think that what's happening now has anything to do with what happened in World War II? And the fact that for the previous, how many years before the war, at least 12, you were in a massive deflationary spiral? And
there was a spiral, but not only that, but the war was a game changer in terms of how everything was done. So, you know, as an example, a number of examples, but, you know, mass production of Jeeps and of other, you know, type of land-based war vehicles translated back into new and different production technologies or production approaches for automobiles. The famous Levittown types of homes that were initiated by the Levitt brothers. The ability to put up homes quickly and in quantity was leveraged off of putting up airstrips and putting up facilities, in literally days, that had to happen during the war, every time the Allies took some ground. So all of these things came back and got implemented into the economy. What revolutionary stuff? Now, there's plenty of revolutionary stuff going into the economy, but I don't think it's, I think it's more evolutionary, frankly, than it is revolutionary, because we don't have that one event that is changing everything.
Well, you know, it is always interesting when something is written. What was it? When the facts conflict with the legend, print the legend. The idea of making, like, row houses quickly after World War II. You look at Hometown here in Illinois, the South Side. It's one of the examples. And yet, none of that was revolutionary, Kevin. Because if you ever have taken a visit to Hoover Dam, which is one of the most spectacular things to study. Now, when I say that,
it is jaw-dropping. I've been there. Yeah,
but it's not just. It's my mom said when she first saw Gone with the Wind, all she thought about was the beautiful people and the parties. The second time, when she was in her 30s, all she thought about was the wounded. You know, your perspective gets amazingly different as you age, or maybe it should. I don't know. A lot of people maybe don't, but it probably should. First time I went to Hoover Dam, all I did was, like, God, this thing's unbelievable. You know, looking at the concrete and just the enormity of it. Now, as I've read a few books on it and actually have a film of the thing building, all I see now, Kevin, is the fact that even there was a rumor of a dam being started, and there were people living on the shores, I guess they're shores, banks. Banks, is that the term for a river? Not shores. On the banks of the Colorado River, down in that canyon, in that heat, like raising kids with tents just so they could get a job. And I look in there and I'm going, anybody who thinks that their life is anywhere near tough now, well, of course you could have somebody in your family that's sick or something, so it could be just as tough. But these people, God, Kevin, as rivers rushing by, it's all mud or silt. These women are walking around with babies on their arms, and they're in these tents. I don't see how the hell they survived down there. They got no job, and they're just waiting for somebody to hire them. And when you talk about building a house that quickly, if you take the tour of Boulder City, they said you really had to know your address, because when you came home, you might not be able to recognize your house because there might have been an empty lot next door, and now there's a house there. Because that's how quickly when people started to work there, they essentially built a city in a matter of a couple of months, like right up the valley. So, I mean, those techniques had been used before in some places. Those houses aren't bad either. I mean, they're all slab houses. They're not you know, basements and everything, but still, they're not bad. And but yeah, I'm saying when you see that, what people can you can write whatever you want to deflect stuff. But the fact is, I mean, I think our listeners might be the only listeners around that are if they're enough to listen to us, they're capable of pulling out the pencil and paper. Notice how I didn't even say calculator, and say, okay, let me get this straight. If McDonald's has X margin, okay, and they increase their prices by 10%, and these people are getting paid at this end, and they haven't had a raise like for a real long time. So let's say they haven't kept up. But even if they did, a 10% raise at the upper end versus a 10% rise in prices versus a 10% raise at a lower end, Kevin, even if you just take the margin, it puts advantage McDonald's. And doesn't it really? I mean, it's not even close.
Well, yeah, I think so. What's interesting about McDonald's, and there will be industry material about this, is we will be able to see the, you know, the in-store sales, the deltas on that, and the average ticket, and I think that'll tell you a lot, because you know, in past years when McDonald's changed its menu and had a you know, 1 to 2 years of, you know, kind of shifting people into these higher end designer type of sandwiches that are, you know, meant to compete with places like Red Robin and so on, that that you could see the average ticket going up and saying, okay, it's been pretty effective for them to roll out new products. They have not rolled out new products in several years. So if the average ticket is up 10%, that's just telling you that either people are eating 10% more, not likely, or they're up 10% because of pricing.
Well, I mean, yesterday they interviewed some of the chairman, and basically every single person said, now, if you're in big person, important person speak, increased margins is synonymous with increased prices, correct?
No, not necessarily.
99% of the time.
Yeah, if the product mix changes, if consumer preferences on what they choose is, you know, those are kinds of things that can affect margin too.
In theory,
well, if you're looking at increased margin on a specific product, yes, but you're not going to get that data.
Now, a guy like you who studies and teaches supply side, there is no question that there's good margin increases. If you're charging $100 for a widget and your cost of production is 70, and all of a sudden one of the pieces in the production which costs you 10, you can find a way to build yourself for 9, so now your cost of production is $1 less, you could conceivably increase your margin without impacting any of your customers.
Without impacting any other factor except your supply chain. Yep.
And your bottom line, basically. And you might even have hired a few people to get it done. So it could conceivably be a very positive thing. But more often than not, when you see the CPI doing what it's doing, it's just plain price increases. Right? I mean, when Home Depot says it's margin, it's price increases. Right?
Yeah, I would expect so. Again, unless people are going into Home Depot for products that they never bought before.
Yeah.
But you know what? They're not. There's more do-it-yourself, and there was definitely more do-it-yourself during lockdown times. But that was just shifting demand from contractors to individuals.
And now you got to hire the contractors to fix the stuff that you did yourself.
Right. And the contractors would go to Home Depot and buy it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't a lot of contractors out there buying wholesale.
But we don't really see, you know, and it was always hard to get, but there would be somebody, you would think, if we had a couple of, you know, if Stacks and Jacks was worldwide, and we had speaking of a budget, if our budget was $1 gazillion, we probably would have a couple of investigative reporters. Can we have Thomas do this, you think? Maybe he'd love this kind of stuff.
Good question.
Although they might boot him out just by seeing him wandering around. I mean, if he actually went out and charted, you'd have to do it ongoing because it's pretty hard to get history on this stuff. If you actually charted the price of lumber prices, shooting the when they shot way up, and now they've come down quite a bit. If you were to have a link every day to the price of lumber and the futures markets, okay, and then you were to get some kind of a idea of how long it took the supply chain to get, say, a piece of plywood to Home Depot, which probably isn't that long. It's probably, what, a couple of weeks maybe, Kevin? I mean, in other words, what is the change in the wholesale price of plywood versus the futures price? So there's going to be some lag there. Not very much, but there'll be some. It'll go up pretty quick. And then you look at the retail price in the Home Depot or the Menards and how it spiked up. Well, if you get some kind of an idea, are they raising the price on stuff they already bought at a lower price? Probably. I mean, most places are going to do that. Now, the question is, now when the futures price goes flying down, how long of a lag is there between the wholesale price, where Home Depot is paying for the lumber to go down, how sticky is it, and how quickly does the retail price at Home Depot go down? And I think you would find, I mean, if you were somebody who was going to be the next, you know, Nobel Prize winner and spent and had a lot of people, minions working under you to keep track of this, I think you would find an amazing lag and stickiness on a lot of this stuff, Kevin, because I don't think the competition is there. And I'll give an example. It's getting a little long-winded here, but the theory of price, it was a two-product course at the University of Chicago with a Nobel Prize winner teaching it. So I'm not about to teach it in 30 seconds on the radio, but the fact is a lot of this stuff, if you lap on top of the fact that there isn't a whole lot of competition in that industry. Example being, if you just went out and bought a shipload of gas, truckload of gas, and you're paying, and you're charging $3.40, and all of a sudden the futures prices drop immediately, and the next guy down the block goes out and buys his for $3.20, the retail price could be $3.30 tomorrow, and you have to lower yours, and you have to basically suck it. It's still on the retail end, gas is pretty competitive. And if you, nobody cares what you just paid the guy last week and you didn't sell yours fast enough. If the new shipment's cheaper, you're selling it at a loss. I'm gonna step out, Kevin, and say Home Depot does not have that problem. That they're concentrated enough. If it's enough of an oligopoly to where the wholesale price of plywood is down to $20 a sheet, and they're still charging $67 because the wholesale price 2 weeks ago was $40. So I think that they revel in the fact that the prices are amazingly sticky on the way down, and probably go up quicker than they actually paid for that piece. Now again, this would take an awful lot of guys or ladies and getting kicked out of Home Depot is writing down prices because they probably booch out, and some knowledge of the wholesale chain and some knowledge of the futures part. So we're talking about a serious study to actually make this rigorous, but I'll bet we would find exactly what I just said. Because of other things that are there, which meaning it's an oligopoly, it's not competitive, all those other things. So I don't think Home Depot, on the way down on the prices, ever lost a nickel on a sheet of plywood. I'll make that bet.
Yeah, it's interesting. What is the market for just retail purchases for plywood?
I spotted one.
Pretty much Home Depot, Menards, and Lowe's, isn't it?
There's still a few.
Here locally, we have several stores for Big C Lumber, which is, and that's a pretty good-sized operation, but it's localized. But other than that, I really can't think of a place where you could go to get sheets of plywood and 2x4s and all that kind of stuff. There may be a few, but that's it.
Southside here, you can still do faxes. I don't know of any place in the city. I mean, if you're a contractor, I'll bet there's a place you know of that is much more of a wholesale type of place. That if you show
well, what happens with contractors, at least the contractors I know, is they open a contractor account with say a Menards or a Home Depot or all of them. And then they just go in, they show their card, and they get a discount. It's, you know, I don't know what the discount is. I probably knew it 10 years ago when I had somebody working on the house. But they do get, it's, I doubt, you know, I'm sure it's not wholesale, but they do get a price reduction. That's probably another inflationary aspect of all the do-it-yourself stuff. So, you know, if a contractor does it for me, a contractor goes into the store and buys it at the discounted rate. As soon as I go in and buy it for myself, I'm paying full boat here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I actually, when I was doing a real lot of work on my place, which is four stories, so it's pretty much a contractor, I went to the south side Home Depot, and the ladies there, they were digging me because it was 7 in the morning. I was the only person there, so they had to talk to me. I don't think they were necessarily digging me, but they gave me the price of they put some other contractor's name on my bill and gave me a discount as I signed up for the contractor's discount. It's where, you know, you name the project on there and all that stuff. After that, on the north side place, I never saved a dime, Kevin. It was always, oh no, if you use the same credit card and we have a history of all your stuff, when you get to a certain amount on the paint, you know, we'll give you a coupon based on how much paint you bought. I never, whatever it was, if you needed to spend $5,000, I was at $4,000. When I got to $5,000, it was $6,000. I mean, I never got squat.
You needed to set up an S Corp.
Yeah, I need, but I think Menards and Lowe's, now Lowe's the price I think are higher, but Lowe's is much more favorable to contractors. Now, it used to be, like you say, back in the day, when I was doing some, you know, when I was remodeling when I first came out of school on weekends. So I was a financial analyst, retail trader during the week, and remodeled houses on weekends, and played softball all I could. So it was a busy time, Kevin. It was fun times. But that's back when you could, you know, you never were tired. you remember those days. But I would,
yeah, those days when you could come home at 1 a.m. and still be at work on time in the morning.
And still feel good. You know, it was.
And still feel all right about it.
Yeah, well, my
or uncle, even if not so, you know, you at least were able to drag your sorry ass in there and not and gut your way through it.
Got your way through it. It'd be okay by the afternoon. So you go do it all over again. Well, I used to go to Southtown Paint, which was the professional, Benjamin Morty and all the real professional stuff. So I'd go in there and there was the chomp off the street price, you know, which was pretty high. Then there was the number two discount that if they recognized you, you know, and you went in a lot like I did, I got the number two discount. You know, the number one was no discount. Number two was
that just sounds like something you wouldn't want.
Yeah, I know. So then my uncle, who had been a painter forever and had been retired, and he goes, well, where do you buy all your stuff? And I go, Southtown Paint. He goes, oh, come on, I'll take a ride with you. Well, there's one guy in there that he'd been buying paint and stuff for, you know, years, decades. He goes, I'll introduce you to my guy. So here's my nephew. Give him the number three. And I'm like, what the hell's the number three? Well, sure enough, Kevin, it was unbelievable. Back in those days, I mean, a gallon of Regal wall satin, which was the flat pan at the time, Benjamin Moore, which is the best you could buy, still probably is. It was like the retail price was like $11.50. I had been paying like $8.50, and I think the number three was like $5.80. It was an incredible discount, especially if you bought like some huge honking ladder that was, you know, a real good one, a contractor one. You know, it would be like, you know, $150 chomp, you know, $120 if they knew you, and like $85 if you were to come. I mean, it was incredible, the discount. I don't think any place does that anymore. I mean, I don't see that, because it was like less than half of what the other people paid, or maybe about half. And I don't see that happen at a Home Depot or a Menards. Matter of fact, I have a bone to pick with Menards, and, you know, I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but I've sent in twice now for this 11% discount. I've never once gotten a check. Of course, I'm too much of an idiot to take a photocopy of the checks and make sure that, so I can write them back 3 months later and say, hey, you idiots, this is what I sent you. You owe me, you know, whatever, $80. But I'm way too lazy to do that. But I've never gotten one. You know, I don't know. How big of a scam is that? What percentage of people who shop at Menards with this 11% discount all over the damn place half the time of the year, what percentage of those people get 11% off on that particular item? By the time they gather a few together, they're not just buying two things that cost you $20, and you say, I'm not going to do all that for $2. $220. You know, what percentage do you think they actually pay off on that?
You have to go back and claim it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you got to send them a letter with all the receipts.
Yeah. Okay. So the percentage, less than 5.
Yeah. I mean, they actually give you a little one of those things with the real tiny squares that if you write normally, the stuff won't fit in the squares.
Yeah.
So you have to.
Yeah.
You have
forms
to,
design is a major failing of the world, but yeah.
So you got to fill that out, and you got to put an envelope with all the receipts and send it off. And they'll tell you that if you get it, it's going to be like 6 weeks or something. Well, who the hell even remembers you sent it in, you know, if it's not hundreds of dollars?
Yeah, what you do is because we have electronic calendars with reminders, is you go put it on your calendar with a reminder. And if you really just want, you know, if you have the time and you like to be a pest, then you just start pestering them every day once you get the reminder thing.
God.
You know, honest to God, if they count on people just going away, the way to get what you thought you had coming is to not go away.
Well, one of my interesting story about a calendar. One of my buddies from the OEX or the OEX bit, he was a broker, and he ended up being a market maker for somebody else for years and years. I think he just retired. Anyway, this guy was Everything you ever would say about somebody who's Irish with the Irish tendencies, let's just say it was this guy. You know, he just got off the boat. Nicest guy. But he was, boy, talk about a guy who was naturally farm strong, though, Kevin. The guy was strong as an axe. Absolutely strong as an axe. He was a great softball player. Hit the ball a mile. And, he couldn't play the field as well as you could, but he could hit the ball. And when he hit it at you, you knew you got something hit at you. Let's put it that way. And, so he's one of these knuckleheads. He goes to see his accountant one year, and he goes, for his taxes, he goes, yeah, we'll take off like, you know, whatever, $800 for like, drinks and meals. The guy says, well, do you have any receipts? What do I need those for? Typical trader. Well, you gotta have receipts. I can't just take them down on you gotta have some kind of receipts of who you had to dinner and what the business purpose of it was and everything. I don't have anything like that. He goes, how do I do that for next year? So the first thing you do, is you go out and you buy a calendar, and it's back before it was the internet, because you buy a calendar, and by the way, you can even deduct the price of the calendar for taxes. So he goes out and he buys a calendar. Well, of course, everybody, nothing's secret in the pit, right? So one of the couple guys start giving a whole bunch of grief about, well, how's his bookkeeping going? And he's giving everybody crap back. So somebody yanks the calendar out of his pocket, opens it up, and it's like the middle of June. The only entry is January 2nd, calendar, $2 for taxes. was the only entry he had. Of course, the whole pit, everybody's passed it around, showed it to everybody. this was life in the OEX pit. It was fun, Kevin. It was more fun sometimes when it wasn't training, but it was his thing. That was his calendar, right? So I don't have a calendar on my, I might have one on my cell phone, but I've never seen it. Just saying.
Interesting. Hey, so after break, I do want to circle back on the COVID stuff and the implications for it for some of the athletic teams.
By the way, my neighbor Bill Murphy, who has a whole bunch of granddaughters, and one cuter than the next, they were absolutely beside themselves, almost in tears when what's her name said she was not going to compete anymore. She's absolutely their favorite, the gymnast. But now I guess she is going to do the individual.
No, I just read this morning on...
Nope, not this morning.
Yeah, ESPN front page, Simone Biles is not doing individual either.
So she's going home?
Sounds like it, yeah.
That's wild. Anyway, S&P Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 44. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox. at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. I was going through the restaurants that got money from the PPP program, and I'm like, we'll read out a few of these. It's interesting. I'm sure some people have some interesting. What got me on that shtick is Boeing just came out with their earnings, and their stock is up $9, so obviously they beat. They post first profit since third quarter of 2019 thanks to jump in deliveries. Now, those guys obviously take their income when they deliver a plane, so they started delivering a lot of the planes that were on the ground, so it's sort of not a surprise. But now they're saying that they're not going to lay off as many people as they thought they were. And I don't think there's anybody. If one of the Stocks and Jocks listeners was in Congress, the first thing you would do this morning is probably pick up the phone and say, "How much money do we give these guys? Why are they laying off anybody?" I mean, but they don't, you know, there's no discipline to this stuff. There's no anything. They give people money to not lay people off. Do we actually check that? Why would we ever do that? Anyway, S&P futures up 4, NASDAQ futures up 45. Now futures down 53. Again, we've got Apple down 144, even though they had good earnings. Now Boeing is up 9, and we still got the Dow futures down, which is kind of weird. But all right, let's go over to Europe. We've got DAX up 33.2%, FTSE up 14.2%, CAC around up 43.7%. Well, these guys are slow, but to the upside, and they were down a little yesterday, as we all know. Or Asia, Nikkei down 388. Now they were up yesterday. It's 1.4%. Shanghai down 19.6%. But Hang Seng is actually up 387. That's 1.5%. But they were down 8% in the last 2 days. So that's talk about a dead cat bounce. But they are up today some. Review of yesterday: Dow was down 85, S&P down 20, Nasdaq down 180. We're down a lot more than that intraday, and it came flying back as we sort of usually do. Bonds 10-year up 2 basis points, 1.26. The Bund minus 0.45. Japan, so that puts, like I say every morning, that puts them in amazing negative interest rate numbers over there, but they don't seem to be moving out of there. Japan, a positive 0.01, so hanging to positive side. UK, positive 0.57. We've got oil, up 14 cents, 71.79. Seemingly comfortably back over 70 after their race down a couple weeks ago. Brent up 2 cents, 74.50. Natural gas down 4 cents, under $4, 3.92. RBOB, unchanged at 231, and we got gold down 290, back under 1800, 1796. If you would have told me that everything in the world was going to inflate except gold, I would have said, what planet are you on? And yet, we're on planet Earth. Crypto, Bitcoin up 2,700, over 40,000, 40,736. That was under 30,000 a week ago. So that stuff is flying up. Eddie with Air Force Traffic, Weather Sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We still have a serious issue on the Eisenhower that has the eastbound side completely closed between California and Ashland due to a fatal crash that happened overnight. Multiple cars and a semi were involved, and the investigation is ongoing. Traffic is being forced off at Western if you're heading inbound on I-290, so I would avoid that if at all possible, because that's a major issue. No issues coming in on the Edens. Traffic building on the Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57, the Bishop Ford are quiet. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, looks like we have a crash at Harlem that has Harlem Avenue closed between Toohey and Milwaukee on the northwest side. That's actually due to a fallen tree from the storm, so not an accident, but it still has Harlem closed with crews working to get that tree removed. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, the storms appear to be out of the area now, so we'll have sunshine and more humidity and a high of 85 today. Could see some rain later on tonight, but should be a nice warm summer day today. Right now it is mostly clear and 75 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 105. Right now it's clear and 83. In sports, the White Sox were down 3-1 heading into the eighth inning before rallying with four runs behind an Eloy Jimenez big home run as they came back to beat the Royals 5-3 last night in Kansas City. Cubs were down big early and kind of stayed down the entire game. They lost to the Reds 7-4 at Wrigley last night. Might be the final last couple of days for Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, who knows who else, but the sentiment is that they will all be traded come Friday.
I'm going to say, man, that they will get nowhere near equal for those guys.
Well, you're only trading 2 months of them, so I don't think you're going to get a ton.
There's no reason why they haven't come to an agreement with Rizzo.
I would agree.
Except they want to have a 2 or 3 month period where they pay people nothing and still have people coming to that park at ridiculously high prices.
They lowballed Rizzo and they've lowballed Bryant. They offered a big contract to Baez, although I don't know if it was a lowball contract, but and all three of those guys turned them down. So yeah, they're going to trade some of them, if not all of them, for 2 months of service to a contender, and they'll get some prospects back, and we'll see what happens. Team USA basketball blew out Iraq yesterday, 120-66. As we mentioned, Simone Biles is not only out of the team event, but she's also out of the individual event, citing mental health. So she is done with the Tokyo Olympics.
Mindfulness was the term.
Yeah. And then,
what does that even mean?
I don't know. But lastly, we'll look at the Olympic medal count. The U.S. is first in total medals with 30. And they're starting to pull away from China, who's second with 24, and Japan third with 21. But the U.S. is now third in gold medals. Japan has 12 gold medals to lead. China has 11, and the U.S. has 10. Chief.
The dynamic, I don't profess to understand it at all, but it sure seems somewhat odd to me. The idea that you're on a team with people and you're competing both as a team and as individuals, man, oh man, that's got to be a cauldron of politics. Just saying. And what other sport is like that?
Wrestling, but it's not as popular.
When is there a team wrestling event?
All of them are team events in like college wrestling and stuff like that. Yeah, they have teams and then individual championships. That's the only one I can think of that comes to mind, where you have your team total and then you have your individual achievements.
I don't know that they're totally separate events, though, that if you qualify, somebody else doesn't. I mean, I don't know. It seems kind of odd to me. I mean, so everybody in the individuals who didn't qualify because she qualified, they move up, or do we lose a spot?
I assume someone moves up to replace her. I don't know. Kevin?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I honestly didn't even know who she was. That's how out of touch I am with. I mean, I'd heard of her name before, I guess, but I didn't even know who she was until.
Well, she's been spectacular for a while. She's been spectacular for a while.
She's an absolutely amazing athlete.
Yep.
Just utterly incredible. So, you know, I if this was the end of her career, it's a hard way to go out. But you know what? She can't compete. She can't compete. Back on the Cubs, the one who should bring them a lot is Kimbrel, because there's a team option on his contract for next year.
Yeah, that's true. So you're not only getting the final 2 months of the season, but you potentially could get next year too if you're willing to pay, you know, $16 million or whatever it is.
Yep. And for a team without a closer that thinks it's going to continue to be good, that's a great deal, and you should be able to get a lot for that. The other ones, you know, you might you're just trying to find that one prospect out there that will make it to the majors and be a pretty good player. That you know, you're not going for the big kill, but you never know, because you know, back when the Cubs were doing their rebuild, I can't remember the guy's name that they traded to the Orioles, but he was a rental, and they got back Pedro Strop and Jake Arrieta, you know, all
same
deal. And I think, you know, I think Arrieta was just an afterthought in that one. They had, you know, teams had kind of written him off. So, you know, there's still deals to be gotten out there. And of course, you know, the White Sox traded, Tatis for, big game James, a young, he was what, a Class A prospect at the time.
Yeah.
The difference is, back in those days, you didn't sell winning, and you didn't pay. You didn't charge what you're charging now.
Well, you said that at that time too.
To get the next Tatis.
You said that at that time too, Chief, which is why you gave up your season tickets.
When it got to the point where I couldn't give them away, I mean, it's easy for people that don't have them to cluck and say that's okay.
I agree. You make a choice to buy season tickets. That's why I had bowl season tickets for 2 years, and after a while it became exhausting trying to sell them on the games I didn't want to go to.
I don't think it's...
This guy's is why college basketball is such a good season ticket to have. Talking about, you know, 18, 19 games.
Yeah, if DePaul was good and competitive, and especially now that they play somewhat in the city, I mean, it's I wish it was in Lincoln Park, but I'd consider getting DePaul season tickets. But they've just been so bad for so long, they're just like out of sight, out of mind.
Well, I know an awful lot of people.
Yeah, Loyola season tickets would have been pretty good this last couple of years.
Yeah, they would have, and God, those have to be really cheap.
But this is not, on a business wise, this is not the time to do this when you just launched your own station. I know a lot of retail establishments that don't have that station.
I agree. Obviously the COVID thing really derailed a lot of things for everyone. But talk about, yeah, you would think you would want to be like trending as high as you could possibly be when you're trying to get this station off the ground. And if you think you're going to have a 2 or 3 year rebuild, we saw how bad the ratings were back when they did this the last time. And that was at a point where everyone was still excited and about Theo Epstein and what was around the corner. Cause I think anyone that paid attention knew they were going to be really, really good for really long. And of course they were, but no one watched those 2012, 2013, 2014 Cubs because they were unwatchable. And if you try to do that for 3 years, you're going to bury your channel.
I often turn away from them now because I don't think they're very watchable.
Yeah,
you know, when I find that watching the Cubs pisses me off, and then, you know, I'll turn it off.
Well, I don't,
and that's often the case.
From the from the baseball side of things, I mean, they've had a few people that have regressed somewhat, and everybody knows that. Unlike the rest of the people who probably know more than me, I'm one of those guys who thinks that baseball is way more of a team sport than other people do. And I think if you had a few people that actually connected with the ball once in a while, you'd see Rizzo's batting average higher than it is, or Bryant or somebody, because I think you can pitch around those guys. But the idea that they've been given zero help in the last 3 years, I mean, who have they went out and got, man? I mean, everybody's just, you know,
Kimbrel.
Okay, and he was
was a big one. Two years ago, they thought everyone.
They've actually acquired a lot of pitchers that just didn't happen for them.
Yeah.
You know what was the guy's name they got from Colorado? Tyler. What was his last name?
Oh yeah, God, I've completely blocked him out of my mind.
He came in his first year, and he was like an established, you know, low end, back end of the rotation type of starter. And he couldn't throw the ball within a foot of the strike zone. I think his last year he was actually decent at coming out of the bullpen, but
he was making starter money.
No more than decent. He cost him a lot of money.
How about you, Darvish?
They've gone for relievers that just, you know, who was the guy they got from the Dodgers? What was that guy's name? He, you know, pitched half a season for him and then was injured the rest of his time, you know, under contract with the Cubs. They've gone to get some guys. It's just that, you know, they just haven't worked out.
Yeah, they gave you Darvish over $100 million.
And he gave him one season.
And he gave him, first season he was useless. Second season he was really good. And then they traded him. But you're right. Yeah, the big time for some reason, I'm blocking these guys out of my mind. But Kevin's right. The former closer of the Dodgers that they gave a bunch of money to be their closer, he never pitched. Basically, you know, they knew they had a window from 15 to 20 essentially, or 15 to 21, and 15 they were really good, 16 they were really good, 17 they were really good. And then they just kept trying to patch it together. Man, we're one piece away. We're two pieces away. Let's sign this guy. Let's sign that guy. And for whatever reason, those guys didn't work out. And then you saw some regression with a couple of guys. You didn't know Addison Russell was going to be completely out of baseball when you thought he was going to be a superstar. You thought either Almora or Happ or both of them would be big-time players. Neither of them are. And so, you know, that's how it goes.
And Schwarber actually, you know, was disappointed.
Yeah, Schwarber too.
They had
such
high hopes for him.
Yeah, so you had, you know, half of your core didn't really pan out like you thought they might. But that happens with every team. There's a reason why the Yankees did it in the 90s, and they were the last ones to do it. To win, you know, three World Series in a row or two World Series in a row or three out of four, it just never happens. I don't know why. I guess it's just really hard to do.
Well, you got 30 teams all trying to do this.
Yeah, I know, but if you would have told me in 15 and then obviously in 16 with the Cubs how young they were and how talented they were, I would have thought they would have at least won two. Not necessarily in a row, but like, you know, two out of 4 years or, you know, two out of 3 years or something like that, and it didn't happen.
I'm going to say that I thought that there was a flaw in their system from day one. Their idea was you bring up the position players, and somehow you fill in the pitching end. And maybe at the time that was the right thing to do, but all of a sudden now they filled in on the pitching side and it didn't work out. Marietta did, but they don't have very many young arms in the organization. And guess what? They traded away all the position players that they essentially drafted that were good. They traded him away for pitchers that didn't work out, like you're saying, Matty. But
yeah, they traded Eloy for.
Well, for a while, they also made trades for pitchers that did work out because they got Hendricks in a trade and they got Arrieta in a trade.
But
I don't know that they thought either of those guys was going to be a really, really good major league pitcher, but they both turned out to be.
Well, you end up with this idea that these guys are really, really good, and I would say at the time, of course, it's part of me, my radio personality. You always kind of push back and try and make people think a little bit. You know, their guys were, look at the guys they drafted. Well, they didn't have one injury in anybody they drafted. They all came up, they all had nice careers, Bryant. But, I mean, the guys before them, I mean, Jim Hendry was given, you know, nowhere near the money to work with that Theo did when he came into the place. And the people that he drafted all were number one prospect in the minor league, and they all got hurt. Felix P.A., Big Chop Choi, all those guys, they all ended up going elsewhere because they got injured. They got some of the, what was it, Patterson?
Well, actually, they traded Choi. They got
They traded him because he wasn't
the tall, lanky first baseman that was pretty good for them.
But they got Derek Lee
traded Choi for Derek Lee. He wasn't a problem. I know he got hurt, and I know he never had much of a career in Miami. But they parlayed that at the right time, so that, you know, that was okay. But yeah, they had guys that didn't, you know. I don't think Felix P.A. got hurt. I just think Felix P.A. Had a strike zone that started about 4 inches above his head and ended about around his toes.
Yeah, Felix P.A. sucked. That was his problem. He was terrible. Corey Patterson, you could argue, he had one good season and then he got hurt. And then he basically was out of baseball. Hesop Choi never had a good season, and he also got hurt, and then he was out of baseball.
I did once see him hit the scoreboard in Milwaukee, though, when I lived up there and the Cubs came up to play.
But Corey Patterson was
home run that actually hit the scoreboard.
But Corey Patterson was a guy that was he had all that speed, and as soon as he had no speed, when his knee got tore up, he was useless.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is a lot of this is luck, and it's all a question of numbers. Putting people in there, they didn't give Jim Henry. I mean, what I'm saying is it's all about how you manage from the top, and who knows what these guys have pulled back on lately. But Jim Henry wasn't given any money. He drafted people, and then he wasn't given it for those. But Kevin knows this, and we got to shift tactics.
They had the top five payroll with Jim Henry. They signed Soriano over $100 million deal. I mean, come on! What are you talking about?
Before you say,
I don't know what I'm talking
about.
They had
this. They both. They've had a top five payroll for the last 15 years.
What? Before you tell me, I don't know what I'm talking about. You might at least want to know what I'm talking about. What I'm saying.
You just said they didn't give him any money.
I said, that's when you interrupted.
Well, that because it was wrong.
They gave him, and they wanted. He wanted to fill up through the draft. He had the same mentality as Theo did. But everybody he drafted from high school, they would not give him any money to basically give him enough money to not go to college, which was the game back then. You drafted these kids out of high school, and if you didn't pay them enough, they went to college. You
drafted Kerry Wood out of high school and got him.
Okay, but the rest of his people, he was losing half of his draft every year, which, you know, is a... I don't know.
So after a couple of years of losing half of your draft because you can't sign them, what would that tell you to do? Draft college players.
Well, but you're assuming that they were going to pay.
Which he did. He drafted Pryor.
My point was that his budget on the draft side, that wasn't the current management style. They would much rather pay a Soriano and get a name and sell tickets the next day than build from the bottom. That was their style.
I understand that. It was stupid.
But
you know what? If you're the general manager, and I know it's hard to, this is easy for me to say, because I'm not the guy with the job, and there's a select few of those jobs. But you know what? And this is true of any management person in any business, is if your leadership insists on being stupid, your move is to get out of there. Not to perpetuate it, because you get branded with the stupid too.
There's a lot of I don't know about that at that level. I mean, so the guy who was the general manager,
did Henry work again?
He died.
Well, he did work again. He was an assistant GM, I think, with the Yankees for a while. So he was he did work again, but he was never a top guy again. And then he did die.
Hey, we're running out of time, yeah. And I wanted to raise this specter of this issue, and we can talk about it more on Friday, too, if you want. But if you recall, last week we were talking about data from Israel and data from the UK that is showing that lots of people who have been vaccinated are now getting the virus. Whether it's Delta variant, Lambda variant, doesn't matter. They're getting it, but their symptoms are mild and maybe even non-existent. The problem with that is they're still carriers. They're still able to infect other people. So now you don't think you're sick, so you don't stay home or anything like, take any measures. They don't think they're sick, and they're giving it to other people. Everybody worried about asymptomatic carriers before vaccines, and that was very rare. Now asymptomatic carriers is becoming a bigger thing. So now when you start talking about, is your football team 85% vaccinated, that means you have 85% potential asymptomatic carriers to spread it amongst each other.
I have not.
With the regular testing, this is going to be interesting to see how many teams have to cancel games or have to lose players because who are vaccinated and who were... who got the infection from being around vaccinated people.
I have not. I've read a whole bunch of stuff, Kevin, a lot of stuff you sent me and other people. It doesn't appear that there is a... I'm leaning your way on this, but I haven't read anything definitive that says that a vaccinated person can pass it on. They obviously,
yeah, there's lots of stuff out there. I sent you a study, a whole study on that.
What I'm saying is they surely can get it and have it, but can you give it to another person? Do you have enough that you're expelling out that you can give it to somebody else? The answer to that is equivalent.
There is, and this is strictly not data, you know, significant data. It's just an anecdote, but there's one documented one guy out there who gave it to 60 people.
All right, so my question comes down to if everything, from what I'm reading, again, and I'm not making policy here, from what I'm reading is that it's dropped down to the spot where the people who are vaccinated, when they get it, like you say, there doesn't, the vaccine is doing what it's doing. And this, I think, is the biggest problem we have countrywide and worldwide. We never told anybody that this vaccine is going to protect you from getting very sick or dying. That was the intent. I never said you weren't going to get it. It's like a flu shot.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they did. Tom. Heck, Joe Biden said it last week.
They may have thought they said it. That's not what people heard.
Well, I definitely heard that you can still test positive and you can still carry it. The idea was that it's going to keep you out of the hospital. It's going to keep you from dying. So that, there you go.
And therefore, the lesson here is it is not that the unvaccinated people are going to kill us all. The lesson is if you want to get vaccinated, do it for yourself.
Yes.
But your impact on everybody else is trivial.
That's exactly what I'm going.
I'm with you, 100%. If you don't want to get vaccinated, I couldn't care less. Do whatever you want.
Yet
we have a whole portion of the world that says you're stupid, you're selfish, and you're going to kill others.
Well, you may kill others, but it's going to be other people that aren't vaccinated, so who cares?
Well, that's it.
If everyone makes a choice, they know the risks they're taking. Choice.
Well, my conclusion was, right now we're going to have to just say, it is what it is. I mean, it's the flu. If you want to get the shot that probably will make it less intensive for you, go ahead and take it. If you don't. I mean, I think we're at that stage, Kevin. But
there's one other aspect to this, and it's sort of the, okay, let's look back now. So if now we're going to shift and say it's really all about protecting you, then why were we so adamant to squelch any discussion of treatments before there were vaccines?
Money. Why do you think the mask mandates are coming back? People are making masks. They're not helping anybody.
So the mask lobby has become a force?
I
don't understand any of this. None of it, you know, you can trace a lot to money, but for the most part, we are just doing stuff that doesn't make any sense.
We're thinking we're back in last March where there weren't any vaccines and there were a lot of people, if you infected them, you were able to kill them, which, you know, was pretty tough.
Now everyone's
we know better than that, and yet we're still doing the, you know, fear porn.
The fear stuff is crazy.
I don't understand. You know, it can't all be that everybody thinks that there's, there's some marginal revenue to this. It can't all be that. I don't know what it is.
I didn't say all.
It just makes no sense.
But a lot of it is that your people in power think that they somehow or another they have to tell people what to do. They think they saved the world last time with masks, which they didn't. So there's a lot of residual stuff. And like you guys, we're on the show all the time.
So really, it's just that we have too many condo board refugees in government now.
Pretty much.
Condo board people do all the time. Now maybe they've all just, you know, over the decades have matriculated into government.
Well, but, I mean, I'm going to say that if you give a quiz to everybody, they think this vaccine is a measles vaccine. It's not. I mean, you could listen to various and sundry Joe Biden last week. If you want to protect other people and protect yourself, get the
But clearly in the words saying, if you're vaccinated, you're not going to get it.
Well, that's right. And how many times have people been told that?
We said 5 minutes ago that we weren't told that. We were told that you can get it, but you're not going to die from it.
You and I and Kevin and the listeners here read the fine print. I'm talking about if you just listened to the people. There's people who are in sports, are in medicine. Who are the people in the Chicago area? There were a few more black athletes telling everybody in the black neighborhood, get this vaccine and you're good to go, you can't get it. They absolutely oversold this thing. It's been oversold for a year and a half.
Well, I don't think it's oversold. I think it's a good thing to do.
I do
if
too.
If you want to do it. But if you don't want to do it, you've had your chance to do it, you know, more than ample opportunity. So let's move on. If you don't want to do it, you know the risks you're taking, then let's move on. Why is it still a topic?
Well,
we're
a huge topic.
It's a huge topic,
we're
right.
Still, and I don't know why. Any kinds of discussions or movement towards treatments, even though, you know, what ivermectin's got like 22 studies now that you know that show its effectiveness in if you use it for early treatment for when you're infected, and we're still not willing to approve it, not willing to consider it, and we're still you know banning people on social media for even talking about it. Like I said, we are just doing things that don't make sense.
Lori Lightfoot came out and said if they pinned her to the wall, and she came out and said if it's over 2,000 cases a day, we got to do a mask mandate. I'm sure if you would have pinned her even further, she'd have said over 4,000 cases a day, we're going to close bars and restaurants again. I guarantee you that because she said it, she's going to feel that she has to do it.
Okay, well, let me give you because I know we're over time and we're into Russell's time, so... Let me give you a final thought, because I heard someone quip this, and I thought it was pretty funny, regarding Lori Lightfoot. She is the woman who looks like she hasn't slept since 1972.
God. S&P futures up a buck. NASDAQ futures up 47. I tell you what, though, Ram was smart. He didn't want that jab. Now she's pretty much saying she doesn't want it. She's saying she doesn't want it.
Was good.
She's saying she's not going to run again, maybe. So we'll see. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, just my web on the board. SP Futures up a deuce, $2. NASDAQ Futures up 46. We've got the individual stacks. We've got Boeing up $11 as they broke into the profit for the first time in a while because they started delivering a bunch of planes. So that's a good thing. We've got McDonald's is trading down $1, even though they had really good earnings. Well, good compared to what... expectation was, who are all these expectators? But no, the earnings were good. And we also had Apple's earnings were good, and they're down 96 cents. So that would have been a nice one to do there if you'd have decided it wasn't going to go too far, because it hasn't. Microsoft was down. Now it's up $3. They were down last night. They had earnings as well. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Happy Wednesday morning.
Are you officially one of these expectators?
Am I what?
Are you one of these expectators that has expectations of earnings out there and then everybody always beats them?
I do, and actually when we have more time and when the work is done, I'm gonna, I'm coming up with a, and this is an academic term, I'm coming up with a novel way to determine whether somebody has a, earnings surprise or not. And it has to do with how the stock reacted, not whether they beat, you know, Wall Street estimate numbers or not. Because the true thing is, you know, how did the stock react? Not, you know, whether or not they beat earnings by a penny.
Are you driving in your car? You're coming in and out.
Oh, I'm not driving in my car. I'm in a parking lot.
All right.
That's interesting, though. So you would completely flip the whole model on its back by using stock reaction to determine estimates.
Yeah, that's actually part of my dissertation.
That's interesting.
Are you going to include?
We could spend the whole hour with me trying to explain. Basically, if the stock, I take. The absolute average, or the absolute value of the average move over the last 8 quarters, and if they drop more than that average, I say that was a negative surprise. If they go, if they move up more than that average, I say that was a positive earnings announcement. And if they fall in the range, it was just basically within expectation.
Do you cut this move off before the conference call?
No. It's the full day move.
Okay, so if somebody comes out and says our revenues are up 30% and the stock is up, you know, $20, which is in the do you account for the straddle at all in there or no?
Then the straddle's the next step as far as all the work goes, but it really is. It's just a matter of did it move greater than or less than the absolute value average over a certain amount of time. And if it drops an awful lot, you know, you said, let's say McDonald's was down 98 cents or Apple was down 98 cents.
Yep.
If an average move was up or down 50 cents, then that drop of 98 cents would be a negative earnings surprise.
All right, so what do you do?
I'm always, negative earnings announcement.
I'm always going to ask the question, like if I'm correcting your paper for once in a while, when I always ask you to correct mine. So they come out and they have huge earnings, and Matty Weber, the revenue was huge because Matty Weber's company all of a sudden bought a whole bunch of stuff from you, and you had a big quarter. Then in the conference call, you say, well, Matty Weber just retired and folded the place up, so we're never getting an order from them again. All of a sudden, it goes from up a lot to way down. You're just counting the end of the day, the down part.
Right.
Okay.
You got to allow some time for all the news to be digested and get into the stock. So.
Okay. So it's...
I've done the opening after earnings as well, and typically what happens is if like a stock's down a buck when it opens on earnings, it just keeps tripping in that same direction.
Well, how do you again? Boy, I'm asking.
Yeah, I do a lot of work around earnings. You've just never asked me about it.
Well, the reason why I'm asking is way back in Da Day, I mean, and for a long time when we went and gave seminars, and you remember this, there were groups of people who all they did was trying to figure out when stock splits were going to happen. And what the idea was that stock splits are always positive. And so if you could sniff one out, and they would like scour the tape for, Russell Inc. Approved more shares at like the July board meeting. Well, that's a dead giveaway that come, you know, September, they're going to have a stock split because they didn't have enough shares to do that with before they weren't authorized. I mean, stuff like that. So they, you know, guys would be all over these announcements and any kind of, corporate headline to drive into the stock split piece. Yet when I was in grad school, I mean, way back in the day, that was a question then, were stock splits a good thing? And one of the professors at the time, he was in the economics school, he was in the business school, you know, had a group, and they went back over every single stock split, sort of like what you're doing, Russell. And the conclusion was, they had no conclusion. The reason why is they couldn't, single out the stock split announcement. It's just usually, virtually, you know, some huge number, Russell, 85% of the time, 80%, 75%. The stock split, and they never came out and said, by the way, our earnings are 50 cents a share, here's the revenue, and oh, by the way, we're going to have a stock split. There was always, oh, by the way, we're also increasing the dividend, or oh, by the way, this other good yeah. thing happened. And so they couldn't separate the stock split announcement from earnings upgrade or an increase in dividend to the point where they couldn't even do the study. They couldn't isolate it. Now I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Now in your stuff, you have people, I mean, whoever these expectators are, that identify all the information to such and such a time, and then all of a sudden they come out with this number, which is it can be a surprise, cannot be a surprise, and you're kind of trying to isolate all the thought process up to the number, yet. There's all kinds of other stuff that could come out when they give you the number. Oh, by the way, we're going out of business. Oh, by the way, we just bought another firm. Oh, by the way, the president has been chasing, he's one of Epstein's guys, and we got to get rid of him tomorrow. I mean, there's a million other things that happen on that day.
Yeah.
That, I mean, but you're including them all, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying when the company comes out and says, here's our earnings. Here's what we think is going to happen in the near future, which is, and then they get grilled on a conference call. All that information is, in my mind, part of an earnings announcement. It's not just that little number, and that's how I teach it as well. Is that this is when, and especially because they changed the rules, about 20 years or so now, where companies are not allowed to share any material information with big investors or Wall Street analysts. Unless they share it with everybody at the same time. The earnings reactions have increased dramatically since they changed those rules. Because everybody's digesting, they have. I quantitatively know that they have. And, but because that information, because now they're dumping a lot more information all at once, I think you're getting more of a true market reaction to new news because everybody is pretty much getting it at the same time.
I'm gonna say that what it did was it kicked people like you and me and Maddie out of the loop. That in order to be in the loop now, you really got to be somebody. But there still is a loop that gets it at other people.
You think it's a much? I disagree. I actually think because there's some really bad legal ramifications if a company does share material information with a couple of analysts and doesn't share it with everybody. There's some really bad repercussions. We'll just put it that way, because you're basically breaking the law when you share material information with a Wall Street analyst and you're not sharing it with all of them.
Okay, but if all right, go ahead. I'll take that one. All I keep thinking about is the Fed sharing information with the five banks that they consider a part of their world.
Well, that's not a company.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't doubt that happened. That's a completely different.
The only suggestion that I would make then is that you would title this paper earnings day or earnings something, because it's way more than just the announcement.
Yeah. Well, it's just how does the stock price react relative to what it normally does, and every individual stock has a different behavior with respect to earnings.
Oh yeah,
they all have different ranges. It's very interesting stuff.
Well, how do you make out a place like? Now, of course, the last time we didn't do something, we didn't get filled. Thank God, because it seems to me that now again, this is just my memory, so it's probably flawed. IBM has gone through a period where the stock creeps up, and every earnings announcement is not good enough. The thing drops like $5 or $6, then over the next 3 months, it makes up the $5 or $6 and does it all over again. I mean, that's I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
I recall that. I know exactly what you're talking about too, because I've seen that in the numbers where the stock kept getting hit around earnings, but if you summed up all of those hits over about, I think it was 6 quarters or so, if you summed them all up, the stock wasn't even down that much over that, year and a half period.
Yeah, it would get whacked, and then it would take 90 days to creep back up and get whacked again. I think it's kind of stopped doing that, but, plus that you can't trade that, because just because it did it the last 4 times doesn't mean it's going to happen this time, right? I mean, it's a...
Right. But oh, and there's... Well, you asked me about the option thing.
Yeah.
what I have, the other thing that I have found is that, and nobody's allowed to steal this because I haven't defended my dissertation yet, so I'm swearing all listeners to not steal this and go write it up for an academic journal.
Okay.
Because I will find you.
Oh, Maddie's already scribbling down for
you. Yeah, I know. Maddie's scribbling notes away right now. But another thing that I have, one of the really cool things that I have found is, like, let's say that on average Apple moves 5% off of earnings, up or down, and we get a 10% drop this quarter. Because we had an outlier move, there's a higher chance that the options are going to overprice the next quarter's move.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, I know it makes logic. It's logical, but you know, you can say, yeah, that makes sense, but in the academic world, you've got to prove it.
The guys, and you probably know, this is a long time ago that I, when I was first learning this stuff, and they talked about what volatility numbers in the history would a stock be currently trading at, what implied volatility. And I think the guys found back then, again, I don't think it was rigorous enough for a doctoral thesis, but they seemed to think it was quite a bit of the near history, a little bit of the not-so-near history, you know, maybe medium-term history, and then a pretty good chunk of the forever history and virtually nothing in the hole in the middle. In other words, how the stock had been trading the last month, a little bit about how it traded the month before that, and then a real lot of forever and not much at all about 3, 4, 5, 6 months before. So it's kind of a big hole in the, almost like a donut hole, a donut looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that kind of what, I mean, what you're, was that what you're seeing? It's a lot of what happened like the last month and then the rest of it is the last 90 month, 90 quarters or what?
Relative to
The movement.
What the reaction is?
Oh, yeah, like how quickly does the option market forget? Like if last quarter we had a big, had a 20 hour.
Oh gosh, it forgets. Well, it kind of forgets about midday.
No, no, I'm saying.
but then it remembers again when it's earnings time.
No, I'm saying is if IBM has a huge move in their March quarter, April quarter, I'll say that uh-huh. it's probably going to be reflected in the straddle come July. But now,
it doesn't really start to show up until about 2 or 3 weeks before the earnings announcement.
Okay.
And if you tried to play the increase, this is where it gets kind of difficult to work with. If you tried to time the increase in implied volatility, it practically gets offset by time decay.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like you could buy a straddle, and regardless of what the stock does, if the stock doesn't move around a whole lot for 3 or 4 days, the straddle doesn't change in value.
Well, I do these spreads pretty much all the time. I mean, if I did 4 of them 2 days ago, and I'm going to say I don't think you can ever. I've always, I mean, you tell me I'm wrong here, which would be great because I'll change and do better. I don't think I've never done one other than like the day before. I mean, the last second is the time. I mean, I don't think you ever could think that you could buy the straddle a week before and have the thing go up that's faster than the time decay. I mean, your highest point is still the day before, but it's not really the highest point. I mean, it's like even the last week before.
Yeah, well. I mean, I've never thought that you would be able to do that, but when I teach classes about implied volatility and I talk about how the implied volatility moves up into earnings, inevitably one of the more interested and smarter students will raise their hand and say, well, why wouldn't we just try to profit from that increase in implied volatility?
Because you can't.
And
because you can't.
That's where I explained that it's difficult to do because the implied volatility increases, but the time value starts to decrease a little bit.
Well, it's a two-step, and this is what...
I shouldn't say the time value. I should just say that the increase in implied volatility offsets the impact of theta.
Right.
And the time value stays pretty much the same. I don't think I was phrasing it right.
It's a combination. I mean, how do you... Let's put it this way. You can sit there and say, all right, I have a stack. Let's pick IBM. The stock's 142.61. It's down 14 cents this morning. You can say, wow, the implied volatility because of earnings, the 145s is, you know, 100. And normally it's, you know, it's 18 or something in IBM. 100 is probably high. But the, and the thing's trading for a dollar and it should be 45 cents or something like that, or 40 cents. Still, your mind has to say, well, wait a minute. It's still only a friggin' buck. I mean, I can't protect the $142 app, you know, option or underlying by selling something for a dollar. Even though the volatility is to the moon, it's still a buck. Well, that's going to be very high on the day before earnings. Like, say, earnings are Friday and this is Thursday. What's expiring on Friday? It doesn't mean you could have bought this thing a week ago at 30 cents and have it go up to a buck. It probably means it was $1.25 a week ago. And the time decay is down to where it should be, you know, 25 cents, and it's not, but it's still not higher than you paid for it.
I did a small sample around buying the straddle like a week before earnings and then selling them just, you know, because I got that question so many times. And on average, you would lose about a nickel.
Yeah, you know, it's going to hang right in there.
And then you wouldn't. But the strategy that eventually I'm going to put out there in a professional paper, and I've got all this data as well, is if you have an outlier move the previous quarter, if you put on an iron condor around earnings, and you only do it when there was an outlier move the previous quarter on about 50 stocks or so, you can make money that way.
You can make money if... I'll finish the sentence.
If you are consistent and you follow a rules-based system that says if we had an outlet, you know, if you had a move higher or lower, it doesn't even really matter, the previous quarter, then what's a normal move for the stock? Put an iron condor and your short strikes of the iron condor are equal to up and down an average move. You can make money over a long period of time doing that.
Provided you get the chance to do it 100 times and win 60 of them. If you lose the first 30, you got a problem.
Well, that's why you have to stick with it.
That's the truth. I mean, my stepfather, he's come to our classes and so forth. Been dead a while, but he would he came and one of the things that I would teach. Not that I would necessarily recommend it to people, is because the options have a propensity. They're not a normal distribution, right? I mean, we just fit it in there. That you have more, you know, fat tails or more 3D variation move events or three black swan events, whatever you want to call it. Actually every expiration morning, there used to be only expirations, you know, once a quarter, or then it became monthly in the OEX. Every expiration morning, if you were to have bought the straddle, you actually had somewhat of a mathematical push on your side that if you could do it 100 times, you might end up ahead of the game.
Yeah,
depending on
how much. There's a guy named Jeff Ogden who wrote a book called Trading Options at Expiration. I've never met him, but I own every book he's written, and he's done incredible work. You just described his trading options at expiration book. Where you buy a bunch of options, the morning of expiration, and then there are two or three of them that offset all of these small losses.
Well, my stepfather, of course, being the accountant that he was, divides his money he's going to put involved in this stuff. Say he wants to invest 10 grand. I don't know if it was that much. But he decides to do it $1,000 a time. So he does for the next 10 months, and unbeknownst to me, he didn't even tell me. And he goes, here's a summation. He's got it all written down. And he says to me, you know, your lecture was exactly right. And he said, plus I learned some other things. And this is sort of interesting, Russell, and has to do with a lot of what I talk about where people say their commission's free and they don't care about payment for order flow or any of this crap. But he would say, because he had toured the floor a bunch of times, he says, I put my order in, and I could see, you know, I'd ask the broker what the markets were, and we'd put them in. He goes, a couple times I paid more than I probably should have, the market moved up a little bit between the time that I gave the order and went in. He said, but I also got it cheaper a few times, which tells me that this is not a rigged game. He goes, it may not be perfect, but it's not rigged. And he goes, mm-hmm. So I like it. Now we're talking about a guy who went to the racetrack constantly. So he goes, this game is not rigged. It's fair. Which is why today's world, it might be cheaper for you to do business, but it's not fair. It's, in my opinion. But anyway, he said, it worked out exactly. Because I had one real big winner where there was something weird happened, an announcement, and I made a bunch of money. He was buying a call on the put. He says, I had one okay winner, I had three kind of break evens, and I had five where I lost. And he said, I ended up, after commission and everything, up a little bit. He goes, so it's exactly what you talked about, and by the way, it's a fair game, that's a good business. That was his conclusion. I wonder what his conclusion would be today.
I don't know. I'm trying. There are a lot of moving parts on that one.
Yeah, there is.
Personally, I think it's probably a fairer game because there's so many different markets that or so many different exchanges that you can trade the options on.
If you have three market makers,
If
there's three market makers and 12 exchanges, is that better than 12 market makers and one exchange?
The second one would be better than the first one.
All right. I don't know how much better because the electronics has made things a lot quicker in that regard in terms of the. But I think your thing is fascinating, Russell. How did you decide to do that?
I don't know. Earnings trading earnings are fun, and
well, what if
it's something? And you know, the part of it is you have to look around and find things that other people haven't done.
Well, let me ask you this.
What I did is hard because you got to find the data from all kinds of different places. And getting all of those option prices is a nightmare. Thank God I developed a reputation. Some people would help me with the data.
Well, I don't want to be technical here because we have to head off, but I guess I will be. How do you determine, now if we're talking about, you know, the spider, I guess it's somewhat easy. But a spider doesn't have earnings. But if you're talking about Johnson & Johnson, I'm just looking at my screen here, Johnson & Johnson's up 48 cents. If you're looking at Johnson & Johnson, it's trading 172 down 48 cents for those that care. How do I get, the earnings are on Thursday, how the hell do I even find the closing prices on Wednesday? Because now these bleeps that are now market makers, a lot of times they widen those markets out on the close. I'm going to say out of there's probably 50 stocks that you can get a reasonable read from a closing price. I mean, if you had a guy like me and you knew not just me, anybody who has a quote machine knows what he's looking at. If you were to do this for the next 5 years going forward, and every day before earnings you were to call me with five names and you know I don't dodge the call, if I were to give you what the actual closing straddle was before it got opened up or before whatever, you'd have a. I mean, how do you pick those numbers off of? First of all, nobody publishes the day before closing markets. They're going to show you the closing price, which may or may not be accurate. How do you even get that?
I've worked with a couple of entities that had intraday data. And what I would take the midpoint of the bid-ask spread over the last 5 minutes of the trading day.
Okay, so if you were slamming out the straddle, it would be a little less, but you're getting a pretty good price.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm looking at the that's what I consider a true and I've worked with a couple of data providers that and I think one of them is getting ready to offer these publicly.
Okay.
Where you can buy them, but because there's so many problems with closing option prices, because the last trade could have occurred at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I think a true indication of what an option was trading at, you know, you take, you know, at 255, 256, I just started with 6 minutes, but you know what I'm saying here. If you just take the bid ask at like each of the minutes over the last 5 minutes and you just take that midpoint, and average that midpoint out, I think you've got a pretty good indication of what a closing price would be for, or if you try to do a trade near the close.
Okay, real quick, in terms of rules, let's assume you have a pretty competitive market, which now is not all that. The assumption is, that's why I asked the question. But if you're trading, you know, say the OEX in my day, and the last trade was $3 and the market went out 3 1/8 a quarter, the closing price is 3 1/8 because it's bid above the last trade, which is if you got decent markets and they're narrow and they're liquid, that's a proper number, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But it's when you get the ones like the Board of Trade never published the bids and asks. So on the futures side, the last trade of corn could be $3 and all of a sudden there was a limit up. The bid could be $3.30, right? So the $3 means nothing because, you know, if you want to sell it, if it was open, you could sell it at $3.30, right? I mean, but so it is, the detail here is very hard for you to get. And I'm amazed that you were able to get all this stuff. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 64. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber, and we're getting some fascinating stuff. I'm gonna have to ask Russell, Maddie, unless you talk me out of it. How many people get halfway through their dissertation and find out that the conclusion they were looking for isn't there?
You'll have to ask him when we come back after,
Would that be frustrating or what?
God. That would just be the end.
It would just be the end, as they said on the Ditka thing, right? The end. The Dow futures are up 7. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 63. Again, earnings stocks get Boeing up 11.78 now. We've got Apple is down 84 cents. So Apple's very much unchanged, and I'm very much miffed I didn't do that. Actually, I did that for some people that really liked Apple, and we did the strikes above where it is, and of course, it didn't go up at all, but those people were very bullish Apple, so I did something for them. Better than buying the stock, I guess, because the stock's down. But still, we've got McDonald's is now down 235, but they beat all over the place. And we've got Microsoft will beat as well. They're up 446, trading 291. So some up, some down, mostly up on the earnings stuff. We're in Europe, we've got DAX up 20 points now, 0.1%. These guys are all down a little bit since last time we did this, but still all positive. FTSE up 0.1%, Kekaran up 41.6. We're in Asia. These have been the interesting markets lately. Nikkei, it's been up, when China's all been down, based on what they're doing regulatory-wise over there, or at least that's what we think is going on, Nikkei now is down today, 388. That's 1.4%. They've been up. Shanghai is down 19. 0.6%. They've been down, but not brutally. Now, Hang Seng, which has been down brutally, down 8% in the last 2 days, is up 1.5% today. It's up 387 points. They're a little bit of a bounce back. Over in the U.S. yesterday, Dow was down 85, S&P down 20, NASDAQ down 180. So NASDAQ was down 1.2%, so that's where the big hit came. The rest of them were not down very much. Bonds up 3 basis points, 1.27. The Bund, unchanged at minus 0.44. Japan unchanged at positive 0.01, hanging by a thread to the positive side. UK up 1 basis point to 0.57. Oil, up 50 cents, 72.15. Brent up 37 cents, 70.45. Boy, this was, oil was a serious buy, Matty. What, did it get down to 67? Talk about the bounce, right back up. Natural gas unchanged, 397. It was 415 earlier in the week, or 414, so that's kind of a drop in there. RBOB up a penny to 232. We've got gold down 230, 1797, under 1800. Silver up 16 cents, 2481. The silver continues this fairly violent moves between 2420 and 2530. So it violently moves within that dollar kick break out of it. Copper unchanged, 453. And we've got Bitcoin up 2,500, over 40,000, 40,575. That's up almost 7%. Matty, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The big issue is still the Eisenhower. It's been closed since an overnight crash that happened at about 2:15 this morning between California and Ashland on the inbound side of I-290. It was a multiple car crash, including a semi and a fatality, unfortunately, and traffic is being forced off at Western Avenue. So you'll want to avoid I-290 if you're coming inbound from the western suburbs. That is our biggest issue right now. Other than that, traffic building steadily on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Stevenson looking good. Same for the Southside Expressways. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. Off the expressways, Route 83 and North Avenue out west, there's a crash. And then on the northwest side, Harlem is closed between, looks like Toohey and Milwaukee from a downed tree that happened earlier this morning when we had those storms that rolled through around 5:30 this morning in the city. And that tree, of course, landed on a car, so to make matters worse.
That's not a good day.
No, that's not a good day to wake up to. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, the storms are gone. Sunshine is out. And apparent, and it's going to be a sunny, steamy high of 85 today with lots of sunshine. Could have some showers later on tonight again, but today it's going to be dry. Right now it is clear and 76 going up to a high of 85. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 105 today. Right now it's clear and 84. In sports, White Sox rallied with 4 runs in the 8th to come back and beat the Royals last night 5-3. Cubs lost at home to the Reds at Wrigley 7-4. Diamondbacks lost on the road to the Rangers 5-4. USA basketball blew out Iraq 120-66. Simone Biles, star Olympian gymnast for Team USA, announced that she's not only out for the team competition, but she is out for the individual competition as well. So she is done for the Olympics.
Is she on a plane home?
Don't know. Doesn't say, but she's out. Olympic medal count. U.S. is first in total medals with 30, but they are third place when you measure it by gold medals. Japan has 12 gold medals to lead all countries. China is in second with 11, and the U.S. is in third with 10 gold medals. Chief?
I'm not sure that Japan's going to win a whole lot of medals in track and field.
Wouldn't think so.
And maybe not so much in b-ball. Of course, our guys, well, they clobbered. Imagine if we'd have lost to Iraq.
Yeah, they. This is so far been the worst Team USA showing, I think, ever since they went to NBA players in the Olympics. Beating Iraq by 60, I don't know if that means they're back or if that just means you're playing Iraq.
God, it's so I was reading, Russell, that they're going crazy because they had, 1,400 cases in Tokyo of the COVID. 37 million people live there?
There's a lot of people there.
37 million, for God's sake. How far does that city stretch in terms of geography? Or are these all piled up?
It's probably got to be about the same size as, like, Rhode Island.
Well, it's got to be.
I mean, seriously.
Well, it's got to be as big as Cook County.
Smaller state.
Well, I mean, yeah, because I don't know. Is it? You know, what's the square footage or square miles of it? I mean, I don't know.
That's what Matt and the Google are for.
Where are you getting 37? Because, I mean,
it's 38, I thought.
Well, when I pull up population of Tokyo, is that what you said, Tokyo or all of Japan?
Tokyo.
Okay, Tokyo is 14 million. Now, if you... I'm looking here to see if they're including some sort of metropolitan area outside of Tokyo.
Well, last night they were. It's all they talked about in the Olympic thing.
Okay, I see. All right. So I'm reading along here. So the population of Tokyo City proper is 14 million. But the Tokyo metropolitan area is the most populous metropolitan area in the world with more than 37.3 million residents.
And I'm saying, how far do they push that?
I'll find out.
Well, let me ask you.
That would make them like the fourth biggest state in the U.S.?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I heard
5,200 square miles.
5,200 square miles, so that's 500 by 100.
There you go.
No, that you just added a zero.
500, no, it'd be 50 by what? 50 by 100.
Yeah.
Which is a ways.
Yep.
That's a big city.
Well, how big is
New York? New York is
that's like Chicago and Milwaukee together.
Yeah, to give you perspective, New York is 4,495 square miles, so a little bit smaller, about 700 less square miles.
That's for the city proper?
For the metro area, I assume.
But now the reason why I'm asking is we did a lot of study on this in college. A standard metropolitan statistical area, SMT,
is what we're talking about here.
But don't
MSI.
What doesn't Chicago's like extend to Rockford or something?
Does it? I don't know if it includes Rockford or not, but it does extend pretty far. Parts of Northwest Indiana, parts of like Kenosha and stuff like that, I think, and then it goes out, I think, as far west as DeKalb. But I don't think it includes Rockford.
So it's like essentially a 100 mile circle,
something like that. Yeah.
Well, I guess that makes sense. I mean, because there's how many people are in the St. Louis area, and yet the town of St. Louis is what? They're down to like 250?
Right, the city. Same for New Orleans. The city's really small, but the metro area is relatively big.
All right, well, Detroit's got to be the same way.
Yeah.
Well, it's then no wonder they need all those commuter trains to get people to work.
Yep.
I had no idea that it was that hot there.
You guys were talking about if I do all of my dissertation stuff and the findings aren't any good.
Oh yeah, you got to comment on that.
That's not exactly how it works. What you do is you get a proposal approved, and the proposal states I'm going to go out and I'm going to test like a bunch of the stuff that I talked about in the first half hour, and my assumption is that if you have a big outlier move in Apple stock this quarter, that the options are going to overprice the next quarter's move. And here are the reasons that I think so. And here are some things in the academic literature that kind of back up my thinking. But nobody has done this exact thing, and I'm going to go out and do it and find out if it's true or not. And they approve that proposal, and then I go out and I do all the testing. I write up the number. I write up the results, and then I have a discussion around why I was right or wrong. But going through the whole thing for a couple of years, and then the data not matching up with your theory doesn't mean you have to start over.
Okay, well, I guess. I was kind of including in my talking to Maddie. What if any kind of bad crap goes on? I mean, my dissertation is that softball players don't live as long as other people, which I think is probably wrong, actually. But let's say that's my dissertation. That's where I'm going with this. But then I find out, God, after every softball game, and every softball player drinks 15 beers, and by the way, half of them are smoking at the bar, and they're drunk driving home or whatever, which isn't true. But what if you find all kinds of other stuff where you can't even come to a conclusion? I mean, that has to happen to people.
Well, that's why you do the background research and make sure that you've got a decent theory. And that's why you have a panel of four people that have their PhDs that go over what you're thinking about doing to make sure that it's okay.
So you already knew from previous work and that you were going to be able, as hard as it is, you're going to be able to get the proper numbers even though it was a pain. But you were at least going to be able to get all the stuff you needed to complete it.
Right. I thought so. But there's one data thing that I'm actually having to do manually that's going to take me about 50 or 60 hours. But once I'm about halfway through it, and once I finish that, I'll be done.
Did you know that was a problem?
I thought I had everything I needed, and then I got a surprise.
When you say manually, are
not
you
not a positive surprise? It was a big negative dissertation surprise.
So you're over at the library digging through old Wall Street journals, or what?
I've got several hundred spreadsheets that I have to put all together, and there's not a good automated way to do it.
Yeah, that sounds like my personal hell.
It really is. I'm not happy, and I honestly thought I would be making you guys call me doctor today. I thought this was the week I was going to finish, and it put me back a couple of weeks. So
you got all the stuff. You know where it's going, but the final graph is not done yet.
Yeah. I mean, part of me just wants to make up data and have it prove my point and move on in life.
I don't think you're the first.
I'll edit that out.
I don't think you're the first there. I'm sure a lot of people would like to make up their batting average at the end of the year, too, but it's kind of hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so now when you're done, and it looks like you're pretty pleased with where this is heading, not just in terms of conclusion, but in terms of the fact that it's clearly rigorous enough, and anybody's going to look at it and say, "Wait a minute, he didn't look at this." That you looked at everything. You think you're there? Then what? You go back to the same four people, or how does that work?
Yeah, I go back. I write up the results. I submit the write up. They give them a week or so to read through it, and then I do a presentation around the major results. And if they've got any questions, I defend. You know, I basically defend the results.
Okay, so now when the first day you started, those four people had to agree. I'm going to guess from what I remember about hearing about these things, which isn't very much. They had to agree that A, it was original, right, and B, that somebody gives a crap, that it's important enough for. It's not like, well, that's very interesting, but who cares? I mean, obviously,
add to the body of knowledge. That is the exact phrase.
Okay. Same thing as somebody has to give a crap.
Right.
All right.
So it needs to be original. It needs to add to the body of knowledge. It needs to draw and create. And you just said if they say, well, you should have looked at this and this, that's somebody else coming along and building on what I've done. That's the whole idea behind academic research, is everybody keeps building on everybody else's work.
Well, I'm going to have to ask you, obviously, for Stacks and Jacks, I got to ask you the question. Do you think the research is tradable?
Yes.
Because you're probably the only one.
I'm going to turn it into a professional white paper.
Okay. The reason I ask is the original. This is interesting. This goes into my. I constantly vilify the payment for order flow and the idea that you're, quote, the original work, which you know, hopefully it's educational for others, original work on the, well, what they called the random walk theory, okay?
Yep.
Really had nothing to do with how the graph wandered around and whether the market would be up or down today. I mean, what it really said was, it was a statistical study of Every time a stock trades, well, not every time, because sometimes it can be unchanged, it's either an uptick or a downtick, right? So if a stock's trading 20 and an eighth, if the last trade's 20 and an eighth, the bid's 20 and an eighth, and the offer's 20 and a quarter, and it trades 20 and a quarter, that's considered to be an uptick. And once it trades 20 and a quarter, if it goes back to 20 and an eighth, that's a downtick. So, I mean, I don't think these are terms people probably don't even know anymore because stuff's all over the place. So the original work on the random walk was, if a trade was an uptick or a downtick, is the next trade likely to be an uptick or a downtick? In other words, could you piggyback on the one before and say, sort of like, you know, what Dr. J and a lot of other people do now with, the unusual activity, being on the bid or the offer.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially an extension of the random walk theory, and even though I don't know if they know that or not, but I won't go down there. But so what they said was there was a very slight chance that an uptick or a downtick would be followed slightly more likely that the next one would be an uptick following an uptick or a downtick following a downtick. But that it was so infinitesimal that if you paid any commissions whatsoever, you couldn't profit by it. So it didn't say that it didn't exist. So, but it was it was pretty interesting. Now, of course, the world has kind of changed with different exchanges. Even harder don't even really know half the time. Can you even really decide whether something's an up or a downtick now with all the different places? I guess you probably still can.
You sort of could, but there's just milliseconds between everything. So I think it'd be very difficult.
Well, plus how do you count the ones that are within the bid spread that the big firms have allowed, the big order buying firms have allowed to run through the SEC to everybody's astonishment? What I'm saying is, if you trade IBM, it's essentially a penny wide. Yet a firm can fill you at 0.0999, which is insane because you can't trade it there. I mean, don't get me started on that.
Right.
That's a subject for another day. So I don't even know. Is that an uptick or what is that? I don't even know. But I'm saying
I think that should be rounded. But
I think it should be illegal, but that's another story. Because I mean, why should somebody else be able to trade in a market less than you and me?
Exactly.
So you think that with the commissions today, which aren't very high, even if you charge commissions like PTI does, they're cheap enough to where it certainly wouldn't bother this strategy. So you think that for the next 50 earnings, if the last month was either way high or way low, in other words, Apple today, it's moved, say, $1. Well, the straddle had to be, my memory yesterday, I'm going to say it was 10. Let me see if I can check it. I'm going to say it was probably 10. So it's way less than the straddle. So you're saying that next month I should essentially sell, the straddle is going to be lower than it ought to be and I should be a buyer. But now what you're talking about is you want to do the iron condor so you're not naked anything. I should be a buyer next month, not a seller.
Right.
Because last night it went out at...
No, you know what? You would never want to be a buyer. Only a seller.
What are you, a premium seller guy? One of those kind of guys? So the spreadle went out last night.
Spreadle
went out about $6. Okay, so okay. The market was... Estimation on the Apple move was $6, and it's $1.50. So as of right now, anyway, we haven't opened yet. It looks to me like... Now, yesterday, UPS, which I had a position in, UPS was down... $2 during the show, and the minute the show ended, it was down 16. So we haven't opened yet. So what I'm saying right now, it looks to me like the straddle seller is a winner. So you're saying that now does it work? I guess my next question has to be, Russell, does it work both ways? You said if there was a bigger move last quarter than anticipated, the straddle would be a sell. Now if the last quarter was a smaller move, does that make it a buy?
No.
How can it possibly be? Just question.
Because the straddles almost always price in the average move over maybe the last 8 or 12 quarters, depending on who you talk to. And it's typically, if you did nothing but blindly buy the straddle, I did this one as well a long time ago. If you did nothing but blindly buy the straddle, and then you did nothing but blindly sell the straddle going into earnings and you got yourself filled at the bid or got yourself filled at the ask. If you did it in a lot of names and you did it very consistently, you lose money on both sides and you lose money pretty equivalent to the bid ask spread.
Which is expected if.
Yeah. So it's very efficient, but there are pockets of inefficiency, and I believe that I found one.
But only one way. Only if it's too high, not if it's too low.
I guess another thing you could do is you could just always buy the straddle, with the exceptions of the where they're overpriced, and do something short in that case, and then maybe it would work out. But what happens if you do nothing but buy a bunch of straddles into earnings? you're going to catch something like you just mentioned UPS from yesterday. I'm assuming the straddle made money off of that.
Oh, yeah.
But you're going to lose a little bit on a whole lot of them.
Actually, you know what? The straddle was 10. So it wasn't like, which is really big in UPS. So it wasn't like anybody didn't smell something. I mean, it was sniffed a little bit.
Do we have a minute
yes.
for me to talk about inflation?
Yes.
Okay. So my daughter and I, we're actually on a road trip. I'm in Indianapolis right now. We're working our way to Florida.
Cool.
And we went to dinner last night, and the restaurant that we went to dinner at had taken little stickers and raised the price on everything on the menu by, like, just 50 cents or so. And then they had a sign saying that there was going to be a $3 surcharge on their famous buffalo wings because they're having such a difficult time getting them from a supplier, and they're having such a difficult time getting chicken parts from suppliers right now. They've jacked their prices, but they're buying whole chickens and piecing them out themselves to make the different things that you get at the restaurant.
Wow. I do some, one of the most fascinating places here to buy stuff is this Peoria Market. I don't know if you've ever been in that, going to the, doing a commercial for them, but it's kind of a wholesale butcher place where you walk in and you put plastic gloves on and you actually select the meat yourself. I got their, their, thing 2 weeks ago, and I get their flyer, I think it was 40 pounds of chicken wings. Guess how much?
Oh my! I have no perspective on that. I know how much they are at the bar and grill around the corner from my hotel right now.
It was like $129.
Yeah.
What is it normally?
Well, guess what? 40 pounds of legs were
half
$19.
No.
So I'm
that's why Wingstop is going to Thighstop.
Yeah,
you saw that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's plus I like the thighs better, but that would just be me. But I mean, no, the wings are. Well, we'll talk about the. Hey, drive safe. Are you taking Route 41 and seeing America, or are you taking the interstate?
We'll talk about it next week.
All right, bud. be careful. There's Southern people along the way there. I don't know if they like you very much.
No, they don't.
They don't. S&P futures up 4, NASDAQ futures up 56. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.